5 was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Israel's prime minister's government is lifting restrictions on settlement construction in East Jerusalem, and municipal authorities have approved the building of hundreds of new homes, but the government postponed the annexation of a West Bank settlement. Russell Stone is professor emeritus at American University's Center of Israel Studies.
There'll be an immediate hue and cry from the Palestinians claiming that it kills the two-state solution. The fact of the matter is it won't make that much difference. The settlements in question are close to Jerusalem and in the Area C that is controlled by Israel anyway.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu also spoke by phone Sunday with new U.S. President Donald Trump, who invited him to the White House in February. Gambians are celebrating following the intervention of a West African regional military force after longtime President Yahya Jammeh, who refused to accept election defeat, left for Equatorial Guinea on Saturday. ECOWAS troops entered the capital, Banjul, and took control of the presidential palace. Khalifa Saleh, a spokesman for President Adama Barrow, said the new government is looking to a post-Jammeh future.
We hope that the consultation that is now taking place with those who control last aspect of this transition will help us to build the architecture of a new Gambia, an architecture that will help us to evolve democratic republican instruments such as the constitution and laws.
Mr. Barrow said Mr. Jammeh, who has ruled the country for 22 years, appears to have looted the treasury of millions of dollars on his way out. Mr. Barrow was sworn into office at the Gambian embassy in Senegal Thursday, promises to return to the country soon. This is VOA News. Syria's warring factions are in the capital of Kazakhstan for ceasefire talks Monday, hosted by Russia, Turkey, and Iran. Northeastern University analyst Yasser Munif said disagreements are emerging between Moscow and Damascus.
There is no need to make any concessions to the opposition, and that the infighting should go on and they should take over major regions around the Damascus area and in the south and the north. And the Russians want to move from playing a major role in the conflict and backing the Syrian regime to a position of being a host and a neutral power hosting the meeting and possibly a new agreement.
The level of success at the Astana talks this week could revive the UN-sponsored political talks held in Geneva. Yemeni security and travel officials said three suspected members of Al-Qaeda's Yemen branch were killed Sunday in a drone strike that may have been carried out by U.S. forces. No official announcement about it has been made. Iraqi forces announced Sunday they took two more districts of eastern Mosul from Islamic State, leaving just one left in the north under IS control. The city, divided by the Tigris River, Iraqi state television said several bridges across the river have been erected to prepare an assault on the western sector. In the U.S., severe weather killed at least 16 people in the south following deadly tornadoes. President Donald Trump pledged federal assistance.
I just spoke with Governor Nathan Deal of Georgia. Florida affected, Alabama affected by the tornadoes, and just expressed our sincere condolences for the lives taken. Tornadoes were vicious and powerful and strong, and they suffered greatly. So we'll be helping out the state of Georgia.
12 people killed in Georgia, 4 in Mississippi. Dozens were arrested as hundreds of Nigerians took to the streets Friday in the South, supporting new U.S. President Trump. The rally organized by a pro-Biafra independence group took place in Port Harcourt. Police Sunday said more than 50 were apprehended in what was called an illegal demonstration. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is on a three-nation tour of Africa in a bid to curb the influence of exiled Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen, accused of orchestrating last July's attempted coup, a charge he denies. The government has been pressuring African countries to close schools and charities with ties to Gulen. Energy ministers of the Cartel Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries meeting in Vienna Sunday said they're pleased with the solidarity shown thus far in lowering oil production in a bid to drive up prices. They said almost 1.5 million barrels a day have been cut, and that could reach 1.7 million barrels a day by the end of this month. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, January 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gambia's new president discusses whether he will prosecute former President Yahya Jammeh.
We always believe in the principle of democracy, rule of law. When we get to the office, we will get people to do all this investigation, the overhaul, so that we get a comprehensive report. Based on that, then we make a decision. We don't want to make mistakes.
President Adama Barrow speaking in an exclusive interview with VOA Stringer Sidney Mariner in Dakar, Senegal. ECOWAS is defending an agreement that allowed former President Yahya Jammeh to leave the country. We will get the latest updates on the Gambia. And Liberia's Coalition for Democratic Change chooses former President Charles Taylor's wife as its vice presidential candidate.
Taylor has a track record working for the Liberian people. She comes from one of the most popular countries, which is Bon Country, and she comes with a strong credibility and respect among Liberian women.
Nathaniel McGee is the chairman of a coalition of three political parties in Liberia. And 9,000 Makerere University students failed to pay tuition on time. The stories for Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Gambian President Yahya Jammeh left the country on Saturday. Joining us now from Dakar, Senegal, for the latest update is reporter Sidney Mariner. Good morning, Sidney.
Good morning from Dakar, Senegal.
Thank you very much. What's the latest?
Former President Yahya Jammeh departed Banjul International Airport on Saturday night to Guinea-Conakry, and now he is reported to have landed at Equatorial Guinea, where he is currently seeking asylum.
There are reports that the former president left with some vehicles belonging to him or belonging to the Gambian people.
Yes, the president left with all at least four Zeus luxury cars that are state properties, and the remaining cars that were taken along with the ones he took are currently in Banjul. So he left with lot of looted properties of the state. And at a press conference in Dakar, the special advisor to the president, Adama Barrow, Honorable Mai Fati, said already the state coffers are empty and that at least over 500 million Gambian dollars was taken away by the president within the 2 weeks before his departure yesterday night.
I was reading the declaration by the Economic Community of West African States, the African Union, and the United Nations, under which President Jammeh left. It permitted President Jammeh to leave the country. A couple of things struck me that, one, that ECOWAS, the AU, and the UN will work to ensure that ECOWAS and the UN will work with the government of the Gambia to prevent the seizure of assets and properties lawfully belonging to former President Jammeh or his family or those of his cabinet members or government officials. Let me let you react to that first.
Thank you, James. Again, the office of the president, through his special advisor, Mai Fati, vehemently deny that the document that was purportedly distributed among the media houses, turning away from a declaration that gave Jammeh the green light to leave the country without being arrested. He said this is just a draft document, and when it was sent to President Barrow, he rejected it outright. So he said it does not represent what was discussed during this negotiation. So therefore, the document in circulation does not reflect what was discussed or the reality that led to Jammeh's departure on Saturday night.
And Sidney, you were very fortunate to interview the president, Adama Barrow, in Dakar. So just briefly, what did he have to say?
President Barrow said there will be Truth and Reconciliation Committee, and his government will act based on the recommendations of this Truth and Reconciliation Committee. I did ask him whether the former president will be prosecuted. He said he will not prosecute the former president, but based on the findings of the Truth and Reconciliation, if he is culpable, he will face the full force of the law.
That's VOA Stringer Sidney Mariner speaking with us from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Gambia's new president, Adama Barrow, says he, like most Gambians, believes in the rule of law and democracy. He says his government will establish a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to look into what happened during Yahya Jammeh's 22 years in power. Mr. Barrow spoke with viewer Stringer Sini Mariner in this exclusive interview from Dakar, Senegal.
I will have to find out, because it was ECOWAS who are doing the mediation. But I know one condition I was consulted for, that he opted to stay in the Gambia. But we said we cannot guarantee his security in the Gambia. So I think the condition is let him go and live in a foreign land. Maybe he can return later. But as for now, we cannot guarantee his security.
Mr. President, will you prosecute Yahya Jammeh for crimes he have committed for the past 22 years? I am asking you because this is the call of majority of Gambians who are victims of his repressive regime.
This question has been coming over and over so many times. We always believe in the principle of democracy, rule of law. We believe in this. When we get to the office, we will get people to do all this investigation, the overhaul, so that we get a comprehensive report. Because if you are outside and if you are inside, it's different. It's time we get all the facts together. Based on that, then we make a decision. We don't want to make mistakes.
Will your government establish Truth and Reconciliation Commission as suggested by the international community, including the United Nations?
We will. We establish Truth and Reconciliation Commission. South Africa did it, other countries. We will follow, we will do that. 22 years is a long time. People need to know the truth.
Will your government act on the recommendations of this Truth and Reconciliation Committee?
That's why we cannot waste all those resources. At the end of the day, we put it under the carpet.
What do you intend to achieve in the first 100 days in office?
Well, we are very ambitious. We have a big heart, but the most fundamental within the 100 days to establish our think tank expert bank so that we get these experts together in every area and prepare a comprehensive blueprint that will dictate the whole government. If we can achieve that in 100 days, I think that will be a big achievement for our country. Because we want to have a blueprint that will dictate everybody that can push this country forward.
Many Gambians are stranded at the border because of the political crisis. They fear violence after Jammeh's refusal to step down. What plan do your government have to assure these refugees to return to their homes and build up their lives?
We are in consultation with the host country and with the international organization Red Cross and others. I have assigned one senior member of my team to work on that right now. He's on that mission. We have contacted the GPTC, we have contacted the Port Authority, people who are willing to return because Gambia is safe. The process is going to start today.
Your Excellency, how many years do you intend to stay in power?
I think that is left to every Gambian. We are here given a responsibility based on trust. We want to execute that to the fullest. Now it's left to the Gambian people to decide.
You talk about term limit during your campaign. How soon do we expect term limit in the Gambia to ensure that Yahya Jammeh era did not come up again?
It will come up very soon. It will be electoral reform, comprehensive electoral reform, because we want to bring in a very good foundation for democracy and those strong pillars of democracy where terms are limited. Presidents will always be very careful and we will avoid what has happened with Yahya Jammeh. We've been here for 22 years and never wanted to leave power because he planned to be there for the rest of his life. We want to avoid that.
That was Gambian President Adama Barrow speaking in an exclusive interview with VOA Stringer Sini Mariner in Dakar. Today is Monday, January 23rd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, is defending the agreement that sent former Gambian President Yahya Jammeh into exile on Saturday. The deal was brokered by ECOWAS, the African Union, and the United Nations. Among other stipulations, the declaration ensures that there will be no intimidation, harassment, and or witch hunting of members and supporters of former President Yahya Jammeh's government in conformity with the constitution and other laws of the Gambia. Some critics say the agreement gave former President Jammeh a free pass given his human rights record. The chairperson of the Economic Community of West African States is Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Information Minister Eugene Nnamdi says the three world bodies that put the agreement together should be congratulated for reaching an agreement that guaranteed a peaceful resolution of the political crisis in the Gambia without any bloodshed.
Firstly, I must say that the ultimate objective of ECOWAS, of the AU, and of the United Nations has always been for the peaceful transition of power in the Gambia. That is, for the democratic will of the people of the Gambia to prevail. Secondly, the transfer of power had to be peaceful in a way that there will be absolutely no loss of life. And I think we have to pat ourselves on the back that we have achieved both of those objectives. So the declaration that was made by the three world bodies, ECOWAS, the UN, and EU, is in keeping with those two objectives that I just stated. I don't see how that is a free pass. If you read the declaration very keenly, it says that the UN, ECOWAS, and the AU will work in collaboration with the government of the Gambia to ensure that the dignity, the rights of Mr. Jammeh are respected in keeping with the constitution of the Republic of the Gambia. So this is a combination of all of the efforts that have been made, and there is a successful end to the scenario. This is what we should all focus on.
Yes, you're right. The declaration said that the three bodies commit themselves to working with the government of the Gambia. Then it goes on to say to prevent the seizure of assets and properties lawfully belonging to former President Jammeh or his family and those of his cabinet members, government officials, and party supporters. Did the agreement go too far to say that?
No, the agreement was very clear that those properties that lawfully belong to the former president, his key officials and members of his family, should not be arbitrarily withdrawn or taken away from them. The fact that the declaration was very careful and keen to keep citing the law and to also cite the constitution of the Gambia means that we recognize Gambia as a sovereign country, and therefore the laws of the Gambia must be respected. So the declaration was put together with an objective, and that objective was to ensure the peaceful transfer of power and also to ensure that that transfer did not happen with the loss of any Gambian life or life of any member of ECOWAS. And we have achieved this. So I don't think people should read negatively the declaration that was made, because it is clearly in keeping with the laws of the Gambia itself.
Mr. Nnamdi, the information coming from Dakar says that Mr. Barrow's spokesperson was quoted as saying that the declaration was just a draft, and that when it was presented to Mr. Barrow, that he did not accept it as a final document.
I must say that the authors of the document, they are very clearly listed. It's a document emanating from ECOWAS, from the AU, and from the UN. This document commits itself to working with the government, the sovereign government of the Gambia. I must say that ECOWAS, at the lead, achieved all of what we set out to achieve, and that was to ensure that the democratic will of the people of the Gambia prevails and that this happens without any loss of life. And we have achieved those two objectives. Now, some of the intricate political details that were worked out can be left to historians to review. But if posterity wants to judge this situation properly, they will agree that there was a whole lot of success in this endeavor, because we managed to get President Barrow reinstalled as the legitimate president of the Gambia. And this was achieved without any loss of life. And that is something to be commended.
Mr. Nnamdi, it's so nice to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Eugene Nnamdi is Liberia's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Also in Liberia, the Coalition Fund for Democratic Change, the CDC, comprising three political parties, has named George Weah as a standard bearer for the 2017 presidential elections. The three parties are Weah's Congress for Democratic Change, the National Patriotic Party of former President Charles Taylor, and the Liberian People Democratic Party of former Speaker of the House of Representatives Alex Tyler. Over the weekend, the coalition named former President Charles Taylor's wife, Jua Howard Taylor, who is a senator, as George Weah's running mate. Nathaniel McGee is chairman of the Coalition for Democratic Change.
So the George Malavia of Montevideo County was elected as the first member of the Coalition for Democratic Change. And George, we are named Senator Joshua Habotillo of Bourne County as his nominee.
Let's start with Mr. Weah. Weah has run for president now. This will be his third time running for president of Liberia. Why do you think Liberian people should give Weah a third chance?
Well, let me tell the record straight. And Weah has run. He's not running for the third time. He's actually running for the second time as president. In 2011, he ran as vice president. This time around, Liberian believe that it is him, but we are torn. And we see what is happening on the continent. So what happened in Gambia, so what happened in America with Donald Trump, so what happened in Ghana. There's a wave of change moving across the continent. And we believe with the level of experience that we have had over the years, and we think it can now provide leadership. For any president to control a party for 2 years in Liberia, a major opposition party with all the challenges that we've been facing, but the party will remain strong for 12 unbroken years. It shows the level of leadership this man has.
Ambassador Weah has chosen Senator Joe Howard Taylor as his vice presidential running mate.
One, Senator Taylor has a track record of working for the Liberian people. All her service to this country, she has worked for the interests of the ordinary citizens. She comes from one of the most popular countries, which is Bourne County. She has won two successive senatorial elections for 9 terms. She's now going for her second term. She served the first 9 years in the Senate. In 2005, she won overwhelmingly. In 2011, she also won. And she comes with a strong credibility and respect among Liberian women. And so her being on the ticket brings only a greater help in terms of winning the election.
What do you say, Mr. McGee, to those who say, well, why did you pick Senator Taylor when her party is the party of former President Charles Taylor?
I don't know why people are always bringing Taylor in this business. Taylor is in a hate. Taylor party has never committed any crime. The NPP did not commit a crime in this country. The NPP, like any other party, has a right to rule. So by being a member of NPP does not make you a criminal. Every Liberian in this country have a right to participate in our democratic party. And the people of Liberia have given Mrs. Taylor a two-term mandate. And so we are suggesting that the people of this country are stupid people. And which is not the case. So by being a member of the NPP, does that make you, does that mean that you have committed a crime? I don't think so.
So
she has always been a member of the NPP. She has always been a member of the NPP. And she has won two successive elections. So what will you say about that? Are we suggesting that the people who voted for her, they don't know what they're doing?
Antonio McGee is chairman of a coalition of three political parties in Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. In Uganda, about 9,000 Makerere University students have failed to beat the fee payment deadline as demanded by the new tuition policy. Professor Dumba Sentamu is vice chancellor of Makerere University.
The policy, which was actually approved by the government of Uganda, and it was agreed upon by the government of Uganda, by the students and the staff and members of council, is that you must pay all the tuition by the 12th week of a semester. We have 17 weeks in the semester. If you don't pay by the 12th week, then you are given another extra 2 weeks. But at that time, you're supposed to pay a surcharge of 5% on the outstanding amount. And after the 15th week, you're not allowed to do exams, and you may actually be deregistered.
19,000 students, that's almost half the population of the university. So what happens?
No, I don't think that is actually. Maybe about 9,000. I don't think it's 19, actually. At the time, I think it's a bit of exaggeration. I think it's about 9,000. At least by Friday, that's what I learned, actually.
So there's no reconsideration, no consideration for those students, if it's even 9,000.
No. As I said, okay, they're still paying, but now they're paying an extra 5% surcharge for 2 weeks, actually. So they're still there, but they should be paying a surcharge of 5% on the outstanding amount.
So those who haven't paid their tuition, they are not going to be allowed to sit exams. So what happens? Would there be a time after they have paid their tuition to be able to take their exams?
No, as of now, we are now in the last 2 weeks, okay? So they are allowed to pay. They see, actually, they see our students, but they continue paying, but they pay an extra 5% as a surcharge. Now, after 2 weeks, they shouldn't be allowed to do exams. However, if somebody has got a genuine reason, he can always appeal to the vice chancellor, and the vice chancellor can, I mean, it's a case by case, okay? He can allow them to do exams.
So if they do not sit the exams, there's a possibility they could fail the classes.
Yeah, exactly. They miss a year, they miss a semester, and indeed some of them can be deregistered. And that's a policy which we agreed upon between the students, between government, and between our governing council.
Now, Makerere is a private and or also government institution. Is that correct?
It's a government institution, but we do have private students there, and they happen to be the majority, actually.
Now, after the university reopened, Professor, I mean, some time ago, the university was shut down. The staff were complaining about, say, payment of some arrears. Everything has been settled now. Everything is on track.
No, they plan to pay that money, those arrears, but we haven't been able to pay the arrears. And as you know, we can't pay those arrears unless the students pay. If 9,000 students are not paid, then it's possible for us to pay the arrears. However, there are plans to pay the arrears, and we say that we are going to pay the arrears by the end of this financial year, which ends June 30th, 2017.
Professor Dumba Setapmu is the Vice Chancellor of Makerere University, speaking with me from Kampala, Uganda. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with the 2017 host of the African Cup of Nations, Gabon, who became the fourth nation in history and the first since Tunisia in 1994 to be eliminated from the Cup of Nations in the group stage, despite ending the group stage unbeaten. In contrast, Cameroon, after a build-up to the competition marred by withdrawals of key players, go through to the last eight as runners-up in Group A. Burkina Faso won the group thanks to their 2-0 victory against Guinea-Bissau in the night's other game in Franceville. Later this evening, it will be Senegal confronting Algeria in Franceville, and Zimbabwe will meet Tunisia in Libreville. Tunisia are best placed to go through as runners-up behind Senegal, while Algeria, despite the presence of African Footballer of the Year, Riyad Mahrez, need to win and hope Tunisia lose if they are to go through. On Saturday, Uganda were eliminated from the 2017 African Cup of Nations after losing 1-0 to Egypt in a Group D clash on Saturday night. Ugandan coach Milutin Seradovic says he is leaving a legacy behind.
That a legacy that I have left and I will leave behind is something that will 100% help in 2026 when World Cup will be expanded to 48 teams. That Uganda could be very serious, not just participant, but contender to go to the World Cup.
In the other group game, Mali lost their second 2017 CAF African Cup of Nations Group D match 1-0 to Ghana. The defeat for Alain Griss's men mean they remain placed at number 3 in the group standings with 1 point after a draw and 1 loss. A first half goal from the Black Stars keeper Asamoah Gyan ensured the Ghanaians are through to the knockout stages. And from all the news from the African Cup of Nations, head coach of Nigeria, Ganrat Raw, has said that the standards at the ongoing 2017 African Cup of Nations have been affected by the poor playing surfaces. There has been lots of complaints that some of the injuries being sustained by some of the players have been as a result of the poor pitches. Away from the African Cup of Nations, Chief Executive Officer of the South African Football Association, Dennis Mbele, has assured South African football fans that they will find Sheikh Mashaba's replacement before the end of February. SAFA CEO spoke after the first meeting of the technical committee of the football body since the sacking of Sheikh Mashaba.
We are searching for two coaches. One is the head coach of Banyana Banyana and the other one is the head coach of the men's senior national team. And we discussed the framework that we're going to use to search and hire a new coaches in both of these positions. Basically issues like the criteria we are going to use, what qualities are we looking for in the people we are intending to employ.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Monday, January 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good day.
VOA News is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.